It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hey! Hey! Yeah. Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf? Virginia Woolf, Virginia Woolf. Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Good afternoon, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. This show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Thank you, Melissa, for giving us that information. Behind the board, he's getting better.
I am getting better.
Barton. Mm-hmm. Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
We have a wager going for tomorrow's game.
That's right.
The Pacers and the Pistons.
That's right.
They're still out of the playoff picture. Your team is below 500 as it is.
Sitting at eight.
Still sitting at eight. Yep. And we will hear from the kids' film correspondent, Emma Soce, in a little bit. She's now officially on spring break, but she's not running wild. Don't give her any ideas. And, my gosh, it's already starting. And, gentlemen, I'm going to have you audibly sign in. It's like, what's my line? Only we don't have Kitty Carlisle or Regis Philbin. So, gentlemen, sign in verbally.
Hi, this is Mike White from Cashiers du Cinemart.
And you're also the author of Impossibly Funky.
Yes, sir. I am Impossibly Funky.
And I am Graydon Clark. I've directed a couple of movies, and I'm here visiting Indianapolis from the West Coast.
And I'm Mondo Justin. I am the online editor for the magazine The Mondo Film and Video Guide. I'm also a freelance writer, writing for Shock Cinema and Fangoria.
And you're one of few people with Donald Sutherland tattoos.
It's true.
And it's not from Don't Look Now. That's for your back.
It's actually from Dirty Sexy Money.
Right.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
You should have it so it comes out of the tank like in Kelly's Heroes.
Oh, my God. Don't give him any ideas. But you can see all three of these gentlemen at the, I got to say this slowly, Horror Hound Weekend. Because if you say it fast, you'll get a different audience.
Yes.
Maybe not. But that's at the Marriott Indy East. That's 7202 East 21st Street. And this is running today through March 27th.
Okay, we're late.
You're not late. You're here. This is promotion.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see all three of these gentlemen, of Sid Haig, who we'll talk to a little bit, Corey Feldman, Barbara Steele, the other Barbara Steele, the guys from the Boondock Saints, Andy Robinson, Jeffrey Combs, Tom Atkins, Lisa Marie, the good Lisa Marie, Lloyd Kaufman, and much, much more. So we'll get to all that in a little bit, but I do want to get... I don't mean to get you out of the way, but I know she was very adamant about wanting to come in here. Guess what? There are new movies opening. They weren't screened for the press, and I think I missed one. And it's really okay because we have enough material for a full show anyway. It's okay, hon. Go ahead. I love when we do stage directions on the air. But fresh out of school, ready for spring break, because who cares what the doughy old white guy thinks of Rango, the film sociology kids film correspondent, Emma Soce. Hello, sweetheart.
Hi.
Now, you really, really wanted to come in and talk about Rango.
Yes, I did.
Great. Why don't you tell us what it's about?
Well, it's about this chameleon that had an everyday pet life. And somehow he escapes and finds himself in a new sort of world.
A new world. A new Western world.
Yes.
But not Westworld. That would be a movie.
Yes.
Don't worry, honey. It's okay. It's something involving Yul Brynner. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
You know, the king from The King and I.
Yeah.
By the way, you can shameless plug. You will be seeing Emma and I in Footlight Musical's production of The King and I in May.
Wow! Congratulations.
She is one of the royal children.
Oh. I am royal.
I am not. I am not the king.
No.
You'll see me in the background.
You have to shave your head for
third,
it.
Third priest. You know what? I can't talk on cue as good as Yul Brynner did, and I'm not gonna have somebody sing behind me because I don't have a hole in my throat. All right. So anyway, now also Rango, you liked Rango, right?
Yes, I did.
Now what did you like about it?
I like that it's sort of getting closer to all of the older Westerns that you saw when you were a kid.
Yes.
So now that the kids get to see that, I just think that's sort of cool.
Now, those kids who have not had fathers that showed them Sergio Leone Westerns, are they still going to enjoy it?
Maybe.
Puff up my chest.
Maybe.
So.
I think so.
They're going to like the music, or they're going to like the voices. Johnny Depp, of course, your guy, is the voice of Rango. And Isla Fisher's voice is in it, too, but you can't see her. Bummer. but no, you noticed a lot of homages to Leone films and your new guy, Clint.
Yes.
So
they owe a lot of tribute to Clint Eastwood.
Very nice.
Yeah. So you enjoy.
Does he, like, carry around a coffin like Sabata and stuff?
No,
she's.
No?
You need to show her Sabata.
I know. You know, I showed her the documentary on IFC. So she knows about Django.
Right.
And she knows a little bit. I'm going to have to explain to her how Lee Van Cleef turns into Yul Brynner and then turns back into Lee Van Cleef.
Right.
So we'll get to those, honey.
Well, it's always weird how he was Clint Eastwood's friend in For a Few Dollars More and then his enemy and The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
And we watched last week Once Upon a Time in the West, and I told her the story that Leone wanted all The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly to be in the very beginning, and they said, fat chance of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the question now in the Soucy household is, well, she still needs to see A Fistful of Dynamite, and she'll have the Leone Westerns.
That's the only Leone that I don't like.
I like it. It's just, it's a minor Leone. It's probably the only minor Leone.
And I like when Steiger puts on the accent.
He's just amazing.
Have you ever seen Run of the Arrow?
Yes.
He's so great in that.
It's kind of like, I loved him chewing scenery in The Specialist because he says the word Jew more than the entire cast of Schindler's List.
And the explosive expert.
Yeah. I think there was an article about him that said 60%, he called himself 60% artist, 40% whore.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of summed it up. It was fun watching him. So anyway, the question is, do we keep showing you spaghetti Westerns or do we start to move into Clint's American Westerns?
Mm.
So you don't have to answer now, but ponder it.
I think first we should at least finish the spaghetti Westerns and then go back to
Finish the spaghetti Westerns? Mm. All of them?
Perfect.
Yes. Oh, jeez. Sergio Carbucci for Emma.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Well, honey, okay. Now, before I release you so you can enjoy spring break, do you have any questions for Mr. Clark since you've seen some of his work, whether you wanted to or not? We talked about that off air.
Well, in Final Justice, I was wondering, why did you pick for the main character to be a cowboy?
Well, what really happened there is I was approached by a Maltese production company.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to make a picture in Malta. And I had made a couple of pictures with Joe Don Baker, and we were friends. So I wrote a script specifically for Joe Don to star in. And he is from Texas, and he really is a cowboy in real life. So I had to film the entire thing in Malta. So I came up with this story how a Texas sheriff, Texas marshal, could somehow get to Malta to make the picture. And Joe Don was excellent, I think, in the movie. And that's really how that came about. It was one of the few pictures that I did where I specifically wrote for a character in advance for an actor that I knew was going to do the role.
Oh, okay. That's pretty much all I got.
Is it all right? It's all you got?
Yeah.
You're spent? It's all right, honey. You're doing well. You're doing well. So.
Did you see the picture?
Yeah.
We watched it we watched Mr. Science Theater's treatment of it last night.
Okay.
So.
Well, his character's name was Thomas Jefferson Geronimo. And he says, no, it's Thomas Jefferson Geronimo, which I think is a more accurate pronunciation.
Correct. So, well, sweetie, thank you for hanging out. I mean, you can hang out and have a seat in the chair if you want and observe. And if you have any other random questions, you can feel free, or you can go play out in the hall.
So, Matthew, did you see Rango with Emma?
No, my wife took her to that because I was working on other projects. So, but I've heard about the homages as well as, of course, a nice little wink to Fear and Loathing in Las
Vegas.
That's
what I was wondering if there was some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the poster looks so similar.
Somebody had told me about, in fact, there's a clip, I think, in the trailer where you do see that. And a fellow film critic of mine saw it, loved it, and loved it for those reasons. And it reminded me of Jeremy Irons, my favorite line of Jeremy Irons in The Lion King, when he repeats the line from Reversal of Fortune. He says, "You have no idea."
Actually, Final Justice, there's a scene in that where there's a shootout in kind of a park, and I tried to film that as an homage. Actually, I stole it from Leone.
But you admit it.
If you're going to steal right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But, I moved the camera up way back and then shot from his feet and then shot over the gun and extreme close-up of his eye and so forth. So that was kind of Leone-esque, if I can use one of my films in the same breath.
You also had music from Bruce Morricone. No.
No, but
Frank
I did,
Stallone of the film composers.
I did tell the composer,
do
make
something
it, of course.
Excellent. Yeah, Emma, it was funny. Honey, can I ask you, since we're here, we're amongst friends. Do you? I remember trying to. You heard the theme from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in one of your Disney shows, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
I think it was on one of the Hannah Montana episodes, before Forever, with Rico and Jackson.
Two guys. We don't know who they are. I'm sorry. Yeah. But they have a shootout.
Yeah.
And it's shot with the music.
Their names are Jason Earls and Moises Sarius.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, but they have a shootout that's shot similar to that.
Well, they're sort of like, I forget what it is, but they're just fighting about something.
Okay. But yeah, she came down one Sunday morning vocalizing the theme, which is what every film father wants to hear.
Right.
And she said, "Can we watch it?"
Sure. Yeah.
It took two sessions, but we got to it. So, and fortunately, like her old man, she wants to absorb it. She goes, "Are there any more like these?" So we showed her Fistful of Dollars and then for a few dollars more. So
I can tell you a little interesting story about Clint Eastwood and A Fistful of Dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two things. I was, when I first got to Los Angeles, I was trying to be an actor. And I was sitting in a restaurant with some other fellows who were trying to be actors, and we were all selling stuff door to door to pay our rent. And up walked Clint Eastwood.
Wow.
One of the guys sitting at the table with me knew him. He had been in an episode of Rawhide, which was a television series that Clint did prior to going to Spain. Actually, they call them Italian Westerns, but they really were made in Spain.
She knows that.
Yeah, they were they were financed by the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, a Clint came up. And, the guy that was with me, they were chatting, you know. And, excuse me, Clint said, or the guy said to Clint, "So what are you doing now that Rawhide is off the air?" And Clint said, "Oh, I don't know what to do. You know, the only thing I've been offered is to go to Italy, believe it or not, to make a Western, which I really don't want to do, but they're paying me and I don't have a choice, so I guess I'll go do it."
Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
My favorite story was Burt Reynolds tells the story that he and Clint both got fired the same day by Universal, and they get pulled in the studio office, and the executive looks at Clint and he says, "You got a chipped tooth, and your Adam's apple sticks out too far, and you talk too slow." And Burt says, "Well, why am I fired?" And the guy says, "You can't act." So as they're walking out, Burt looks at Clint and says, you're in a hell of a lot of trouble. And he's like, "Why?" And he goes, "Because I can learn to act, but you're never going to be able to cut that Adam's apple out of your throat." And he never did Cannonball Run. So take that. So, Emma, thank you for hanging out.
What, may I just say
one please.
More thing?
Oh, please. Yeah, why not? Sure. It's, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Go for it.
If you have seen Rango or one specific poster that there is, if you see the little fishy dude, he's so cute.
Thank you, sweetheart. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Emma Sosi. Thank you, sweetheart.
Official
response
to the kids' film correspondent is...
Now that was a good movie.
There we are.
She enjoyed that. All right.
I guess that means bye in Spanish.
Hola. Yeah, adios. All right, let's take a short break. Now, before I'll introduce the music a little bit, piano player Pinetop Perkins died this week at the age of 97. Yeah, you'll be hearing a full tribute to him on tomorrow's Blues House Party. A couple of things. He, of course, spent about a decade with Muddy Waters in his band before. He was 74 when he released his first solo album in 1988, and, of course, has played all over the world. I got to see him in Chicago on many occasions. And he also became the oldest Grammy winner. Not that you saw it on the broadcast this year, but he and Willie Big Eye Smith won a Grammy for the album Joined at the Hip. Why am I bringing this up on a film show? Because he is one of the players backing up John Lee Hooker in the Maxwell Street scene in the Blues Brothers.
Nice.
And it was Muddy's band. Muddy was supposed to be in there, but he got sick, so they brought in John Lee Hooker because if you recognize it, there's Calvin Fuzz Jones, Willie Big Eye Smith, Luther Guitar Jr. Johnson, and Pinetop. Of course, Pinetop also played backing up Muddy and Bob Margolin and Paul Butterfield and the band in The Last Waltz from 1978. Ha! Justified it. Here's some songs featuring Pinetop Perkins. We'll be right back. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Treat my baby right, you better take it easy. You better take it easy, baby. You better take it easy, mama, cause I can't stand the way you do. The girl I love is built for speed. She got everything that a daddy needs. You better take it easy. Take it easy, baby. You better take it easy, mama, cause I can't stand the way you do. Take it easy.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Mike White, Mondo Justin, Graydon Clark hanging out with us today in the, you know, caught in the dust that was left by Emma Soci just a couple of minutes ago. Now, we will get to stuff about Horror Hound Weekend in just a little bit, but yes, I didn't see anything new this week, and it was really okay because I knew we were going to have three guests, and as bad luck turns out, Elizabeth Taylor died this week. And, or as The Onion put it, beautiful 25-year-old woman dead at 79. Which is better than...
Ouch.
Well, which is better than today's headline, in freak accident, 34 Katherine Heigl films released at once.
Ooh.
But needless to say, Ms. Taylor had a hell of a career. And, you know, to go from a child star, think about that in today's world as well, a child star to a young ingenue, and then to have a career after the age of 40 and do some of her, well, some of her best and some of her most interesting work after the age of 40. And hopefully people younger than you, Kobe, you damn kids, don't think of her as the crazy old lady that hung out with Michael Jackson and did the Flintstones. So, by the way, for next week's What is Kobe Watching segment, I did give you Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yes, and a couple of John Wayne films.
Yes, you have John Wayne. Well, last week, because it was St. Patrick's Day, you need to watch The Quiet Man, and a three of The Searchers. You need more John Ford in your diet, don't we all? So, anyway, gentlemen, I was going to say, your thoughts on Ms. Taylor and her body of work.
Well, I can...
You can go any way.
I can tell you a real quick Elizabeth Taylor story.
Please do.
I did a couple of pictures with Marty Landau Very nice guy, great guy.
Love Martin Landau.
Yeah, and one time we were talking about Cleopatra, and he was in Cleopatra, and he said to me it was the most rewarding picture he had ever been in. And I thought, geez, I barely remember him in it. He was one, you know, I guess a centurion or
right.
whatever the, you know.
I think they were all centurions now.
Yeah, a guy in shorts or something, or a little dress or something. So I said,
Roddy McDowell.
Yes, I said, why, Marty? What did you like about it? He said, oh, I didn't like it. He said, I was supposed to be there 2 months, and I was there 2 years.
Oh, jeez.
Because of Miss Taylor's and Mr. Burton's off-screen
shenanigans.
Just expanded the shooting schedule again and again and again.
So, just met more paychecks.
So he was on a hold for 2 years on that film.
I just read, I'm reading a book right now called Fiasco, and there's a whole chapter
yes.
on Cleopatra.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, just to hear about all of her medical ailments and how she kept having to go back to the U.S. and just, had her personal physician on the set.
And it's one of those things, if 24-hour news were happening today.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
News is happening.
No, I mean, wow, you caught me. That's good. I meant to say if 24-hour news was happening 50 years ago.
Oh,
that's what I meant. Thank you, sir. Yeah, well, it'd probably be Titanic. People still go to it. People would go to it in droves and probably give it Best Picture.
Right.
The thing I found interesting, and I loved, I think Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is her best work by far. And she also did solid stuff like we watched Taming of the Shrew this week, Emma and I, and Giant and A Place in the Sun and Father of the Bride. All really, really good stuff. But by the post Richard Burton era. I was just I've always been fascinated with the choices, one, they were probably handed to her, and two, the stuff that she had to make. I think, Mike, you brought up Reflections in a Golden Eye.
Justin, sorry.
I mean, there was that, first off, the Ben Angelina, or the Brad Angelina, you know, all the Jennifer Aniston things got nothing on what happened with Liz and Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds
right.
and later Richard Burton. But the stuff that they just kept getting Liz and Dick together in films, and they only, in my opinion, they only made two good films together, and they wound up doing nine.
And the two were Virginia Woolf and
Taming of the Shrew.
And Boom.
Okay.
Well, Boom is entertaining for other reasons. We'll get that's another one. It's just I wish that would go on DVD.
Sandpiper has a great song.
Sandpiper has a great song. Sandpiper's okay. VIPs is Comedians is. Dr. Faustus is really bad. And Under Milkwood, I'd rather read it than watch it.
As you know, the reason those films happened is because some studio someplace thought they could make a buck.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think usually they did make a buck from them, which is why they kept happening.
Right. In one way, shape, or form. But Reflections on a Golden Eye, I can't remember who summed it up. Somebody said that basically Houston was making an art film and nobody saw it coming. You have John Huston, Marlon Brando, Elizabeth Taylor, naked Robert Forrester, and
the houseboy.
And the houseboy, yeah.
And
house Julie Harris and Brian Keith. And I just saw the, I guess it was originally shot, and they showed it on TCM.
Right.
In that
golden color.
That was irritating.
It was irritating.
They removed that, I think, at one point,
yes,
too.
Yes, they did.
I think in the original I thought it was in the original release. They took it out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty ambitious group, and that's a strange film. And TCM also had Secret Ceremony, which I had never seen before.
Oh, nice.
And that's the other thing, is one of the most glamorous, and we talk all the time about actresses now uglifying themselves. Mm-hmm. Of course, Liz did it first, putting on 20 pounds, but she also wound up playing prostitutes and mm-hmm. Vegas showgirls but they're casinos that are shot in Paris, thanks, mm-hmm. with Only Game in Town. So it's interesting trying to see her play quote unquote common roles or blue collar parts, and not quite. But I just found those films fascinating.
She was best for me in Cat on a Hot Tin
Roof. Oh, she's great in that.
She is. The whole movie is solid. You know,
yeah.
Everyone from Sister Woman to to Big Daddy.
That's right.
Is great.
What about Butterfield 8?
Butterfield 8. Now
that's
there you go.
That's a soap opera film if there ever was one. Boy, I think she got that Oscar because she recovered.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm not crazy about the film, and I like the idea of Elizabeth, somebody all call girls looking like Elizabeth Taylor. That's not the case. So
how would you know that?
I read it
because
I
went to Whorehound.
You read it.
And, jeez, a couple other films of note, X, Y, and Z, which is basically Virginia Woolf with Michael Caine, and Anne of a Thousand Days, she had a small role in that. Winter Kills, which is now starting to get a little more notice over the years.
That was a great one.
The Mirror Cracked, one of the bizarre Agatha Christie movies with the little faces at the bottom of the poster. And A Little Night Music, one of those 70s musicals where they hired people who didn't always sing. We talked,
I think we talked
about Lost Horizon last week.
Oh, I think she did a picture in Russia. I think it was called The Bluebird.
George Cukor is one of his last films.
And I did a picture in Russia. Of course, it was after that. And I had a Russian crew, and my Russian cameraman happened to be the cameraman that shot Elizabeth Taylor in The Bluebird.
Really?
And we were having lunch one day, and Robert Englund was in the picture for me, and we were all sitting around a table at lunch, and we began to talk about Elizabeth Taylor. And Englund said to the cameraman, the Russian cameraman, whose name was, whose Americanized name at least, was Cola. And
Coca?
No, as in actually Nicholas.
Oh, God.
Cola. And Nikolai, I guess, actually. Anyhow, Robert said to him, well, tell us, Cola, what is the true color of Elizabeth Taylor's eyes? And I said, bloodshot.
This is what they are in Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And the headdress. I love the headdress.
And most of the 70s.
Yeah.
But we'll get to the entire 70s. All right, we got a couple of DVD titles to get through. I did see The Tourist. I will say this. It did make me want to watch North by Northwest again.
Oh, yeah.
Really quick.
I saw The Tourist
in
the theater.
Golden Globe nominated film, The Tourist. Thanks, Ricky Gervais.
I saw it when I was in Spain, and it was great because it was completely dubbed in Spanish. I understood nothing about the film, but it was...
I bet you were able to follow it.
It was great, yeah.
Yeah?
I loved it that way. Yeah, I think turning down the volume and just watching Angelina Jolie's bum.
That's not bad.
That's great.
That's not bad.
And everything that she wears emphasizes her bum, too.
Yeah, I don't think there were... I wish there were many bum shots in the lives of others.
Yeah.
But, I guess he had to make a foray. And by the way, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It does look gorgeous, but, you know, go check out North by Northwest or The Wrong Man or The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Yes. So, Mike, who overdubs Johnny Depp in the Spanish version?
I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Antonio Banderas, but I don't think so.
When he's not doing commercials as a bee.
Right.
Also on Blu-ray and DVD this week, How Do You Know?, a romantic comedy that cost over $100 million to make.
Oh, God.
Why? It's okay. It's not horrid. Box office was horrid, but, yeah, I hate to say this, but, you know, if you'd taken out Jack Nicholson, you'd have a shorter, probably a little more easier love triangle going. But you'd probably have Broadcast News anyway. Also on Blu-ray, Emma's not here, so I guess I can bring these up so she won't ask me to buy them for her. Robots, The Sandlot, and Stand By Me, as well as the Riddick Collection, in case anybody wants all of those.
Yes.
There is also the double feature Elizabeth and Elizabeth the Golden Age, so you can get her nominated twice. Also on Mill Creek Blu-ray, I love double features, especially now that they're on Blu-ray, Galaxina. And Crater Lake Monster.
Mm. Love Galaxina.
Yeah. In all sorts of ways. By the way, watch that and Star 80. It's like watching Trekkies in Galaxy Quest. And also on from Shout Factory, Black Oak Conspiracy and the Great Texas Dynamite Chase.
Roger Corman
produced.
Great one. Yeah.
Kobe, do a search of Claudia Jennings.
This is, Gator bait.
This is the part of the show where I make Kobe Google image search ladies from the past.
Yeah.
Jennings.
J-E-N-N-I-N-G-S.
So, see, also out on Blu-ray, Against All Odds. I like Rachel Ward. I've always had a soft spot for her.
Well, I just like
Thank
the Phil
you, Sharky's
Collins,
Machine.
Phil Collins song. So.
He's retired, though.
He's touching.
People don't like his music anymore. Wow. All right, so... That being said, Horror Hound Weekend is this weekend through the 27th. So what are you guys going to be doing? I know my Mr. Clark's here, but what are you guys up to while you're there?
Well, I'm going to be sitting next to Mr. Clark, and I'm going to be signing books and selling books, hopefully. So that's why I'm there. And then I'm going to be listening to Mr. Clark talk about some of my favorite films. So.
A few of his favorite of your favorite things.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and actually we're doing tomorrow, I'm not sure what time it is, but we're doing a special screening of Graydon's film Without Warning,
right?
Followed by a Q&A.
Cool.
As well, which is I don't think has ever been done, at least in the Midwest.
Yep.
And then we're promoting Projection Booth, which is Mike and I's new radio show podcast.
Yes, where can people find that?
Mike?
At projection-booth.com.
And on iTunes.
And on iTunes, yes. Right next to Film Sociology.
Thank you.
No, we only have 30 listeners.
We only have 30 listeners. You probably have us beat by now, so.
We'll talk later.
Okay.
Much later. All right. Well, Graydon Clark, how you been, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
We really appreciate you coming in.
It's very interesting. I like your show. I like your daughter. She's very charming.
Yeah, she's the best part about it.
Absolutely.
Every person who's interviewed by her just says, why is she not hosting? Because we want her to finish third grade.
You're right.
This is white-collar child labor.
Yeah, put her to work at NPR.
Well, it's not you're not cleaning out gun casings,
right,
and
right.
She's not in a coal mine, so... We'll have her redoing excerpts from Oliver Twist as part of the 170 million campaign.
Right.
Please, sir, I want some more.
Shadowing you. You're next. So let's talk about you grew up in Michigan.
I did.
Where at?
A small town just north of South Bend, Indiana, Niles, Michigan.
Michiana land.
Yes, Michiana. And it's southwestern Michigan's a very conservative area politically. And
oh, yeah.
I left there when I was just turned 22, and went to Los Angeles to become an actor. Had no experience in anything, but I went to Valparaiso University, played basketball there, hurt my knee and left, dropped out of school, which was always stupid. And,
but like
and
most athletes, you went right into showbiz.
Yes, right. Well, you know.
Or get the contract first before you get out of school.
There's a great line. Somebody said that if you have no ability to do anything and you have no education, you don't know anything, showbiz is for you. So anyhow, I went to Los Angeles to become an actor and starved for 2 years and got lucky, met a director, and he gave me a tiny, tiny part in a movie, which got me into Screen Actors Guild.
What was the film?
It was a picture called, eventually called, Hell's Bloody Devils.
Nice.
And the director was a fellow named Al Adamson.
Ah, Mr. Adamson's work, yeah.
That's right. And Al and I became friends. Actually, it was because of basketball. I met him through an actress who he was interviewing for a role, and it was her third interview, a callback, and he was interested in her
talents,
her skills,
other than her talents,
other skills,
yes, and she was not interested in him, so she asked me, we knew each other from an acting class, and she asked me if I would go down with her and be her beard. She would introduce me as her boyfriend. So
yes,
for those who
don't know the slang, that's a term for posing as boyfriend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
That's a whole other movie if we do that.
I had like 100 things run through my head right there.
I know you did.
Yeah. Excuse me. So anyhow, I went down with her. I was glad to do it because I had never been on a set. I'd never met a director. I had struggled for more than 2 years, I heard him say on the phone, it was a very tiny office, one-room office, actually.
Is our studio bigger than his office?
Oh, yes, much.
Yes.
Much. And the phone rang. He picked it up, and he said to the guy on the other end of the phone, are you playing tonight? So they talked for a second or two, hung up, and I said to him, oh, what do you play? And he said, basketball. Do you play? And I said, yeah, I play. He said, well, would you like to join us? Well, this was a director about to do a movie. So
right.
I thought for a half a second and said, yeah, of course. So we started playing at the Hollywood YMCA. We became friends. And he gave me a part in a picture. And
By playing basketball?
Yes.
How's your jump shot?
In those days, it was pretty good. Today, you could probably beat me.
See, Kobe, you're looking at a historical point of white basketball. Yes. I have a tendency to call the Indiana Pacers Hickory High. Sorry. So after working with what did you learn from Al from a directing standpoint, either what to do or what not to do?
Well, I don't want to bore your audience, but what happened is...
Bore us! Come on!
What happened is this. We made this picture. He was making a picture, and it was partially shot in Utah. And we were all in Los Angeles, based there. And after the picture was finished, as I say, I had a very small role. I think I had one or two lines. I did have a scene with Broderick Crawford.
Oh, fantastic.
10-4.
I'm going to make you watch all the Kingsmen sometime, Cody.
Oh, he's great in it.
Great film.
So on the way back from Utah, I was riding in the car with him, and I said, so what do we do next? I thought, well, you finish one day, you start work the next. I had no idea how difficult it was to get a picture on. And Al said, well, you know, he didn't know. He didn't have a script. He had a 50-page treatment on a Western. And but he didn't have any money to have anybody write a screenplay. Screenplay is 100, 120 pages, roughly.
Right.
And this was 50 pages in treatment form. So I said to him, well, I'll write it. Now, why I had the, what's the word?
Chutzpah? Please say chutzpah.
Yes. To say that I had never, the only script I had ever seen in my life was the one we just shot.
Well, to be fair, it's like when actors are asked, can you ride a horse?
Of course.
Of course they're going to say yes.
But he didn't actually ask me, could I ride it? I volunteered.
Well, that's your bloody fault.
Jumped right onto that horse.
So I wrote the script. It was before computers. I did know how to type, but I didn't own a typewriter. I actually hand wrote it. And you'd give it to some typing agency, and then they would type it. And it turned out pretty good, actually, mm-hmm. much to my surprise. It was a Western. And we got the script to Robert Taylor, who was an old line major star.
Yep.
MGM star from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. This was late 1960, early 68. Mm-hmm. And Robert Taylor agreed to do it. And ABC Television was just starting something they called Movies of the Week.
Mm-hmm. TV movies.
Yeah.
Right.
And they agreed to finance it. And it was going to be shot in Spain. And it was a co-production between the Italians and ABC TV. ABC was coming up with $300,000. The Italians were coming up with $300,000. And we were going to make the picture. And I had written a very nice part for myself as a young deputy. And Robert Taylor was
stud.
The old. Yeah. Robert Taylor was the old grizzled veteran.
That's us, Cody.
Marshal. So, actually, I was much better looking than you. But
Woo!
So, of course, you don't know in the audience which guy I was referring to.
I know you're talking to Kobe, damn it.
Excuse me. So, anyhow, the deal was done. And we had Keenan Wynn and Dana Winter, and what was her name who played Ginger on Gilligan's Island?
Tina Louise.
Thank you.
Do you need to Google her, Kobe, or do you know who Tina Louise is? You don't know who Tina Louise is? Good. Man. I'm sorry. Go on.
No.
He's fine. I'll keep him busy.
So all of these actors had agreed to do my script. And ABC had agreed to do it. Robert Taylor, so on and so forth. So Al flew off to Spain to scout locations and do things. I was to follow him a week later. And I stopped in Michigan to see my parents, saying, you know, my good fortune, I finally got a break and going to do something. We were sitting around the kitchen table for breakfast, and we heard on the radio Robert Taylor has cancer. He's in Cedars-Sinai Hospital.
Lousy timing.
So how could he do that to me? So to make a long story short, the deal fell completely apart.
That's showbiz.
Now, had it been 10 years later and I had had the experience that I had in the ensuing 10 years, I just would have replaced Robert Taylor immediately.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And kept ABC and kept the Spaniards, or the Italians, actually, and made the picture. But Al didn't do that. He came back to Los Angeles and I returned to L.A. Very depressed, you know. And rightfully he should have been, because it would have been a real chance for Al to have moved his career in a much better direction, sure. A different direction than eventually it did. So on the way back, he stopped in New York and he met a guy who had $50,000. And he said to Al, I'll give you $50,000, make me a movie. Well, the one we did in Utah was about $150,000. And the one in Spain, as I said, was going to be $600,000, 3 and 3. So Al came and he said, what the hell can I do for or with $50,000? So I said, well, I'll just write something that we can do for $50,000. That's easily done, right?
Right.
So I've actually never told anyone this, but no one's listening. So
hey! Jeez.
There was a picture that Cornel Wilde did called The Naked Prey.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He did it in Africa.
Yes.
And it was a story of about an African big game hunter who is captured by supposedly the bad guys, and then they chase him through the jungle.
It was your freshman hazing, Kobe. Yeah.
So I ripped, I mean, I...
homage.
Yes. I kind of took that premise.
White guys be running.
Yes. And I wrote a script. Roger Corman had been making motorcycle pictures.
Yes.
Very successfully.
Yeah.
I think this was just before Easy Rider, possibly just after. I'm not certain of the date. But Corman had already made a lot of them, and very successfully. So, excuse me. So I wrote a script about a motorcycle gang. They were the Africans in Naked Prey chasing a young couple, which was the Cornel Wilde part in Naked Prey.
Sure.
Chasing a young couple through the jungles of Africa. No, that wouldn't work. So I made it to the desert outside Palm Springs.
Good.
So, and it became a picture called Satan's Sadists.
Right here.
Yes.
Right here. Yep.
Satan's Sadists we made for $50,000. In October of 1968, Al directed. I had written it. I had a nice co-starring part for myself. I played a part called Acid. one of the first stoners in pictures, I guess.
I think so.
And I'm the squarest guy in the world. I don't even drink.
It's called acting.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And the film irritated Russ Tamblyn's mother.
You know, it did. It did. We got Russ Tamblyn in it, and Russ was wonderful to work with. He was very inventive.
It's a good role. It's kind of a less is more. I think anybody could easily do the over-the-top psycho biker guy, which had already been done prior to this.
Right.
So, yeah, it was very low-key by comparison.
No, he was, he had been a major star, of course.
Right.
You know, and he had fallen on a little bit of hard time. West Side Story and Tom.
He was a child actor.
Yes, he was. And I think he was Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yes, he was one of the brothers.
And dancing
and nice guy, cooperative guy, and we had some very nice scenes together. So Al was a shy person. Now, being a director and being shy is not something you usually find.
Right.
Al didn't even really like to talk to actors. And sometimes he wouldn't tell the actors what scene we were doing.
Oh, jeez.
So the actors would come to me because I had written it and say, Graydon, what are we doing now? And I'd say, just a minute. And I'd run over and whisper in Al's ear, what the hell scene do you want to do? And then he would tell me, and then I would relay it and what have you.
What were you, in Goodfellas?
Well,
I didn't know Paul Sorvino was directing this.
He didn't have to.
Exactly.
So I really learned what movie making was about
on
that
directing
set.
By proxy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to overdo it now because, you know, it was only the second set I'd ever been on in my life. But the actors soon realized that I could communicate with Al because we were friends. And so they would talk to me, and then I would talk to him, and then, back and forth and so on. And eventually the picture was finished, and I worked. I wrote the script. I worked 2 weeks as an actor. It was a two-week movie. And then I sat in the editing room for 6 months.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was I certainly wasn't an editor. I had never even seen a moviola. But I moved boxes around and stored stuff and what have you for the editor. And that's really where I learned what movie making is all about.
Was it easier working on Dracula versus Frankenstein, or was it the same thing? You were whispering and delivering messages.
No, a little bit different because Satan's Sadists became a major hit.
Yes.
I mean, he did close to $1 million at the box office on a $50,000 picture.
Not bad at all.
And this is in 19, by the time it was released, 1969 money. So it really set Al's career.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came to me and he said he wanted to do a horror film. So I came up with the idea of a picture called Eventually, it became Dracula versus Frankenstein, but at that time, it was called The Bloodseekers, which I wrote.
Sure.
And again, somehow there was a part in it for me.
No.
Imagine
also
that.
A stud.
Yes, right.
Also better looking than Kobe and me.
But probably not as good an actor.
Well, I will say this. When I grew up in Flint, Michigan, yeah. and on Channel 4 in Detroit, there used to be a character called Count Scary,
yeah.
which was this
Tom
guy.
Ryan,
he,
yeah.
Tom Ryan, right. He appeared like every quarter, maybe. Mm-hmm. It was not a weekly show. Wasn't Sir Graves Gasly or anything like that. But he just popped up from time to time. But on primetime television on Channel 4, mm-hmm. they showed Dracula versus Frankenstein with comments.
Yes.
This was before Mr. Science Theater, mm-hmm. around the same time as Spengoolie in Chicago, and I couldn't remember if Spengoolie was doing that or Son of Spengoolie, Rich Cozy.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they were doing.
I think
they were talking over movies then. But,
I think Son of Spengoolie was before, and then
and
of course
right.
The Ghoul was before. Right.
Right. Okay, but yeah. So anyway, I remember seeing your film on primetime television, and that was a fun evening.
Well, in Satan Sadist, my character was called Acid. And in what became Dracula versus Frankenstein, my character was called Strange.
You have a great resume.
Yeah.
So anyhow, this was another two-week picture. We made that picture, and no, it was not like Satan's Sadist because...
didn't you say he came back and reshot or shot extra stuff for it?
Well, Al, after he made The Bloodseekers.
Right.
It did not have the Dracula character. It had the Lon Chaney character,
right.
And it had the J. Carroll Nash character and Anthony Isley and so forth. And then they added later, but I was not involved with that. I had gone on to my own thing by that time. A year or so later, they added the Dracula character and created Dracula versus Frankenstein. So after that, Bloodseeker thing, I wrote a script, an anti-Vietnam social commentary script.
Right.
Which Al
passed
on. I started to say didn't understand, but let's just say wasn't interested
sure,
in.
Sure, sure. And that eventually became?
That eventually became the first picture I directed.
Okay.
And that became Mothers, Fathers, and Lovers.
Right.
And no one has ever seen it outside a few theaters, really, in the southeast, I guess.
Okay.
And it was a social commentary. I'm going to mention a picture, and I shouldn't mention it in the same breath as anything I've ever done, and that is The Graduate. And it was inspired by The Graduate.
Sure.
About a guy who comes, in case The Graduate, he was finishing school, and he came back into society and so on. This
and
was
saw
about,
him bankrupt naked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. And this was about a guy who comes back from Vietnam.
Sure.
And re-enters society.
Mm-hmm. Peace is hell, I think, is what Fred Williamson said in his Return to Vietnam film.
Yes.
What I've loved about your work is, and by the way, watching your films for 2 weeks and calling it research is really fun on my family. But to be able to bounce from one genre to another and get your own spin on it and deliver what that genre needs, you deliver. For instance, I can't look at a hair curler anymore, thanks to black shampoo.
Thank you for that.
And we're going to teach curler safety in our house because of that. But for instance, I mean, so seeing something like black shampoo and like the High Riders looks like it was shot in 1967. It has that late 60s feel.
Yeah.
And it was really, and I had to look at the year again to make sure. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
It seems younger. Mm-hmm. So
well, High Riders was actually in 1977.
Right.
That we made the picture.
Right.
And again, Roger Corman had made a couple of pictures with Ron Howard, Grand Theft Auto
Eat My Dust. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And they were very, very successful. And I was sitting trying to think what I could do for my next project. The one previous to that was a picture called Satan's Cheerleaders. And which is a comedy horror film.
We'll add that to your account, Kobe.
And so I came up with the idea of combining the old motorcycle gang type picture with street racers. So that instead of on motorcycles, they were in street racing cars. And so I wrote that script and was lucky enough to find the funding for it and made the picture.
And what's fun about watching that, and it also reminded me, because the first film I knew that you had done was Joysticks.
Uh-huh.
And both of those films have what in common is, and like a number of your films, is you get to spend time with these guys. I mean, there is story, but you get to spend time in the arcade, in the Southwest. And, you know, especially in the second half, the story really kicks in as far as the competition in the arcade and the racers versus the town folk. But you get to actually spend time with these characters and develop an emotional tie as you're watching the film.
Thank you. I've always felt that you need narrative, you need story, but you also need character.
Mm-hmm.
If you have just character, that can get pretty stale pretty quickly. And if you have just story and you don't know who the characters are and you don't care about them, that also is not good. So I really feel you do need both. And most of the scripts that I wrote, I first thought of the character, who would be in a video arcade at that time. And so
you kind of nailed. Although I wish there were more girls with feathered hair and hot, really short shorts. Not in the arcades in Michigan, I can tell you that.
I wish King Vidiot was there personally.
And then he later throws stakes at Napoleon Dynamite. something else I was curious was Wacko, because there is a wonderful little subgenre of the horror spoofs, because I remember also seeing on cable Student Bodies, Pandemonium, and National Lampoon's Class Reunion.
Saturday the 14th.
That's right. So, and what was fun is I honestly think yours is the silliest of the lot.
Well,
and really, I think should...
And that's
a
compliment.
Yes, and you should go kick the filmmakers a scary movie in the seat.
Well, I've been told, I've never spoken to them, I've been told, and I take it as a compliment, that they saw Wacko, liked it, and realized that there was something they could do there.
And then just make fun of other movies that have no connection whatsoever.
Yeah, right.
And Wacko has a huge, profoundly big cast, too.
Oh, yeah.
If any of the other genre ones.
Yeah,
George Kennedy.
I'm going to tell us about Stella Stevens.
you know.
Think she's hot, too? That whole montage of her in the different sweaters in The Nutty Professor. Oh, my God. Yeah. I watched that in slow motion.
And I think she should share a condo with Shelley Winters as the Cleopatra Jones villainesses.
Yes.
Stella Stevens was wonderful to work with.
Kobe, look up Stella Stevens.
Yeah. Stella was, of course, as a young actress, absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Stupid pretty. Yes.
And when I worked with her, she was, I'm going to say, probably 40-ish.
Wow.
And looked terrific.
Generous.
Because you know what? Anybody can look good when they're 20.
Right. Yeah.
When you get to be 40. That's...
She was wonderful. I'll tell you a quick story about her. All of my pictures, unfortunately, were done on a very low budget, which basically means a short shooting schedule.
Sure.
And I had Stella, probably 6 or 7 days, I don't know. And we had finished her work, and there was one scene with her that I was unable to get to. And it was a scene with she and Julia Duffy, who later went on to Bob Newhart's
Newhart show,
Emmy-winning. Wonderful.
There's no pillow fight in this movie. I was very disappointed, sir.
But the whipped cream scene.
Well,
really.
Okay, that's true. Go on.
The scene with Stella Stevens, who was playing the mother of Julia Duffy in the film, that I couldn't get to, was a dialogue scene in the kitchen, and it was very funny, and Stella wanted to do it, but unfortunately she was finished, so I went to her and I said, thank you very much for working with you, it's been great, yada, yada, yada. And it was. And the crew always applauds it whenever a person is finally wrapped. And she said, but Graydon, what about the scene with Julia in the kitchen? I said, well, I'm just going to have to cut it. I can't get to it. She said, well, I'll come in tomorrow and do it. I said, Stella, I can't pay you. She said, no problem. I won't tell anybody. Let's just do it tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Nice.
So that's cool. Stella Stevens.
That's great.
Indeed. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your connection with Mystery Science Theater? Because you have had two of your films.
I have.
Treated nicely.
You know, Mystery Science Theater, some of their stuff I think is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it I don't care for. but then in my own films, some of them I think are hilarious and some of them I don't care for.
Well, I guess you could say, let's see them direct a film and then let's see us make fun of other movies, I guess.
No, it really doesn't bother me. I feel, in fact, it helps, because the more people that can see my films, the better it is.
Mm-hmm. You got a 9-year-old that saw your films.
Yeah, so, and I'm sure they say this to everyone, but I did an interview for the DVD release of one of their things, and it was Final Justice, the Joe Don Baker picture.
Right.
And they said to me, you know, Graydon, yours is our favorite picture. We really don't like to do this. And I said, sure, guys, don't worry. I've already committed to the interview. I'll do it. Don't worry.
Now, do you know anything about is it real or is it not rumor about Baker's disdain or not disdain for Mr. Science Theater?
Hmm.
You know, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I would frankly be surprised if he cares one way or another.
Sure. Check's cleared.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Now, I know some of the people that are going to be, one of the people that's going to be at Horror Hound Weekend is Sid Haig, and you worked with him a little bit on the Forbidden Dance.
Yes, Lamada the Forbidden Dance.
I'm sorry, yes, I didn't mean to say, there's a long story with that.
Yeah.
If we had an extra hour, we would do it, but his is the better of the two. How was working with Sid?
Sid was wonderful. Of course, I knew who Sid Haig was before he came in, but the casting director brought him into the office to meet me, and he opened the door and he walked in. I said, wait a minute, that's Sid Haig. He doesn't have to read for me. He'd be perfect for the role. Just cast him. Good, great. And he was great in it, and he was very cooperative, and he learned to dance, or whatever you would call what he was doing.
Yeah. Caucasian male swaying and
right,
swaying.
Right.
I have to say, and, Sid's over there today.
Yeah, I know.
And he comes up to Graydon, and the first thing I hear Sid say to you, and I could be wrong, but the first thing he says is, break out the dancing shoes.
You know, the film business, probably much like the radio business, you really live a vagabond life. You become very close with the people you're working with for the 3 or 4 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever it is that you're working with them. You're very close, and you work hard. And I've worked with crews in different countries, and they all work hard and try their best and are even on a very low-budget film. But then you lose contact with them.
Sure.
The film is over. You go your separate ways. I had not seen Sid Haig since The Forbidden Dance, which was done in 1990.
Wow. 21 years. Yeah.
But it was like we were old friends. I saw him this afternoon as we were setting up over at the, what's it called? Horror Hound.
Marriott Indy East.
Yes.
7202 East 21st Street. That's through the 27th. See, Kobe, we've been hanging out so much they think we're fine. You're going to have a salt and pepper mullet if you keep hanging out with me. don't want that to happen.
No, don't want that at all.
So, have you seen any new films lately or old films?
Oh, I see everything.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I really am a film fan, and I like all different types of genres of film, and I like the fact that I made most of the different kinds of films. And I like everything. In fact, I have a hard time finding a film that I can't find something in it that I don't like. There's always the cinematography that's good, or the music that's good, or the acting that's good, or the story. I mean, you were talking about a film, and you were kind of thinking that it wasn't that good of a film or what have you. But I'll find something in it that I like.
Did you see Sex and the City 2?
Not yet. But I did see Sex and the City 1.
Okay, yes. Did I?
How about Superman Returns?
How about Skyline?
Barbed wire?
Well,
I love barbed wire.
I mean,
good, you can have it.
Okay, I'll take it.
She's a beautiful girl.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
she is.
Mute.
Yeah.
Hey, it's got Steve Railsback in it. You can't get better than that. So.
Jeez. Well, gentlemen, plug your websites, plug everything, because you know, and you two are due for a visit where you can talk. So. Yeah. Go ahead and plug your stuff.
All right, Mike White, author of Impossibly Funky, a Cashiers to Cinemark collection. I will be signing copies, as will Mr. Clark, and we'll be giving away, I think, two stills from any of Mr. Clark's films that he's got stills for all weekend long if you purchase a book.
And I am Graydon Clark. You can find me at GraydonClark.com. Send me an email or buy a DVD or a poster or something. But if you have a question, I get a lot of questions about films. Just send me an email and I'll respond.
Okay. Fun.
And I have a new piece coming out in Fangoria 303, which is an interview with Jack Hill I did, which no one knows yet, but it'll be
Hill talking about his new film. He's working on.
Excellent. Very
nice. So that comes out, I think, April 15th.
And then Justin also has the cover of the new Paracinema magazine that will be coming out.
End of next month, the huge interview with Brian Trenchard-Smith.
Excellent. Yep. And, of course, HorrorHoundWeekend.com. That's at the Marriott Indy East, 7202 East 21st Street through the 27th. Gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out with
me.
Thank
you, Matthew.
Here are some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
On behalf of Kobe Slagle, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.